The Junit Islands are naturally rich with a landscape that nurtures adventure and mystery. This is why the Junit people were enslaved and their homes destroyed in order to make room for the adventure and mystery that wealthy Europeans prefer. There is a certain thrill with exotic fruits squeezed of their souls and infused with alcohol that only the technologically superior can appreciate. The Europeans did not, of course, kill the Junit. They're not barbarians. They brought an enlightenment and purity that was oftentimes at odds with rebellions and unruly behavior. And so to defend their principles, they cut out the tongues of the illiterate Junit. The Junit could no longer communicate. And like an ant, under the heated scrutiny of a boy's magnifying glass, their culture died unceremoniously in the name of science. That's not to say the Junit aren't fun people to hang out with. Just the other day at the pub on the corner of James and Poe, the last surviving Junit smashed a bottle over my head, grabbed my collar, and pulled me close. "We had voices," he said to me with his eyes. "We are now blood brothers. Avenge us and you will be free." And then he was dragged away and never heard from again. So I wandered the streets and I found the urchins, the street performers, the lonely hearts alone in their lonely beds, the musicians and the scribes, and I pointed out to them that they too had their voices. Most of them ignored me, but the rest you'll see here tonight. And when you least suspect, one of us will smash a bottle over your head, and we will be blood brothers, and the Junit will be avenged, and we will be free!
My God, it's a long way can celebrate in style. See, I'm gonna dance all night, 'cause I'd bounce right back and I'd be alright if I could just forget your smile. And ooh, ooh, I'm gonna miss you. Ooh, I'm gonna miss you. Though I know this song won't make you stay, well, I'm gonna miss you when you grow away, away, away. Oh, I'm gonna miss you when you go away, my love. I'm gonna miss you, my love. I'm gonna miss you, my love.
Thank you very much. My name is Carrie Ad Harmon, and this is Ollie Rockberger on the piano. And those are my friends out in the audience. And thank you to Wes for putting this on. We're really excited to be here.
My mother was extremely compassionate. She instilled in me decidedly countercultural beliefs. We don't eat fish. We don't kill. We're respectful of all life, despite whatever is in our instinctual nature. Because that's what she taught me, that bravery is the effort of the individual to go against his instincts and do the right thing.
This is Neil. He's thoughtful, engaging, intelligent, and he's a shark. A gray nurse shark, to be precise. 1 year ago, his mother died in a fishing accident.
Nobody has an accurate, straight story. Not that it matters in the end. There was a whole school of fish, East Cove Preparatory, I believe, that witnessed the accident, but few of them actually agree on the exact events. These things are in the past. The water's cold, and sometimes there's little you can do but go where the currents take you.
Well said.
Actually, that was one of my mother's sayings.
Were you close with your mother?
Yes.
She was the primary influence in your life, it seems, more so than your father, at least.
Yes. My father had always been a bit of an anomaly. I never knew him. She never really talked about him. I would hear bits here and there, but nothing ever substantial.
Your father left just after you were born. People say that he was fiercely idealistic, that his ideals had come into conflict with his family. Can you tell me what that means exactly?
Just that he wasn't welcome in the community for some reason. My mother was different. People liked her, even though she was different. I mean, she wasn't in their faces.
But your father was.
In a way.
Do you feel like your father's absence made a lasting impact on your development?
Of course it did. Everything does. I mean, how could it not? But it's not an excuse or even a reason. It's just a happening. That's just how it happens, and we cope with it. You know, people say to me, "That's so big of you to have overcome this as a child." Is it really? I mean, is it really? I mean, what would you have done? The exact same thing. It's not like I had a choice. We just have to cope with the things we're given, and coping is natural. Animals cope and adapt and heal. I mean, if we didn't, we'd never survive.
After your mother's death, you left to find your father. How did you know where to go?
Well, I followed my gut.
Your gut?
Yes, my gut. I decided to follow events, big things that happened, like look for feeding frenzies or go where the fishing boats were headed. I figured that any large cluster of fish would be a better place to find my father than the open water. It was dangerous at first, especially going out to where people were fishing and diving.
I can imagine. People panic when they see sharks. Mm-hmm. Panic is when things go wrong.
Right, right. And there isn't a particularly natural way of telling a human that you're not going to eat them. And there isn't a great way for them to tell you apart from the fish either. Mm. And some of these fishermen, just no sense of accomplishment, of style. They just come up with their nets and swoosh, pick up everything in sight.
People say swimming with the sharks figuratively to represent danger. It should really be swimming with the fish in your case. You could have been caught in a net.
Well, what's life without a little danger?
I agree. What did you figure your chances were for finding your father?
I never really thought about it in terms of chances. I mean, you only consider the probability of something happening if you have to weigh it against something else. But there wasn't ever a question of what would I do if I couldn't find him, because what else was I going to do?
And you did find him eventually.
It was near a big school of fish, like I'd suspect. Mm. But he was just hanging back, watching them, making slow circles. He didn't notice me for a little while at first, but that didn't last long. He glanced at me and was suddenly on guard, and he swam in between me and the school of fish.
Now, I just want to drive home this point. The most important male influence in your life has been missing since the day you were born, and you're a member of one of the most bloodthirsty species on the planet, and you eventually find your father, who abandoned you as a child. What happened?
He took one look at me, and I could tell that he knew, but wasn't totally sure who I was, in the same way that I knew who he was instinctually. Mm-hmm. I was pretty speechless. I mean, you can spend an eternity rehearsing what to say in a situation like that, but when you're actually there, the words just don't flow. So he looks at me and he says one thing. What'll it be?
What'll it be?
What'll it be?
So what did you do?
When I finally figured out what to say, before I could get it out, suddenly he took off and shouted for me to follow him. But what else could I do? I swam after him, and he glanced back at me with an intense gaze, and then looked away, and then looked at me again. And then I figured out that he wasn't looking at me. He was looking just beyond me. So I also glanced back at what he was looking at, and there was a massive gathering of sharks chasing after us. It was a posse. Mm. It was literally a death posse.
A death posse. Like a feeding frenzy.
Yes, a feeding frenzy. I'd never seen anything like it in my life. They chased us for longer than I'd ever swam before in my life. And I swear, something about the way they moved. I mean, they must have eaten adrenaline for breakfast. Now, my father was an extremely strong swimmer, so the gap between us got bigger and bigger until at some point the frenzy had almost caught up with me. And my father turned to look, and I don't know why, but he came back. And by the time he got back to me, the frenzy had just about caught up, and all he said was, excuse me.
Oh, take your time.
All he said was, once is enough. And then the frenzy was on us, and there was a lot of blood. And at first I thought that I was bleeding, but it wasn't me. Now, streaking blood is a terribly, terribly beautiful thing. It's like these blossoms of color. All of their lives have been held back tight inside you. And then when they're let go, there's nothing that can come close to describing that image of freedom. And that freedom, I wanted some of that too. I want to say that I was just, that I was doing my part to end it quickly, but to this day, that's my greatest fear, that by participating in the feeding, I had...
You had succumbed to your most basic instincts.
Yes, yes, that I was a coward. I mean, you know that saying, God hates a coward.
Do you believe in God?
God has no place for beasts. I mean, he shuns that which is basic in our instincts. Everything God says, it's a list of denying your impulses. Thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that.
Now, after the frenzy was over, you left town again. Why?
They told me to leave.
They?
A shark by the name of Sheriff Andy.
I spoke with Sheriff Andy at length. He's an ordinary fellow. He has a reputation, strict, brutal, but apparently it works. He keeps the peace.
If that's what you call it.
You're bitter.
Granted, my father was a wanted shark.
Yes, it seems there were quite a few warnings about him. He was known to have attacked and killed other sharks while they were feeding.
Like you said, fiercely idealistic. There must have been a bit of poetic justice in this because he was vehemently against eating fish, much like my mother, but he'd taken his principles a step further and was sort of a rebel vigilante. Now, Sheriff Andy and his posse had rounded up and gone in search of him earlier that day at his last previous known whereabouts, and they found us and...
They were protecting their own principles, perhaps in a fairly idealistic way as well.
But maybe they hadn't taken all the steps to resolve the situation without bloodshed. Now, I thought that maybe this had been an excuse for them to turn on one of their own. I mean, we are fundamentally animals.
So, moving on. There is someone you haven't mentioned. I think you know who I'm talking about.
I have an idea. My sister.
Yes.
Yes. I guess I sort of neglected to mention that.
You know I couldn't let that one go. For our listeners, here's a fascinating fact about female gray nurse sharks. They have two uteruses. Uteri, if you will. And so every nurse shark is born with a fraternal twin. In your case, a sister.
Actually, we're conceived with many, many brothers and sisters. But there's this period, this incredibly ugly period in which we feed on each other in the wombs. The blood of our brothers and sisters makes us strong. And from each womb, one shark emerges.
That's a terrible thing. To subject such a vicious cycle of life to the unborn.
Nature loves variety. Nature loves alternatives, which is why it's so damning that any particular individual has virtually none. I mean, that birth cycle is an unavoidable burden of the nurse shark.
Did your mother ever explain to you your sister's absence?
No. That too was a mystery, along with my father. I mean, maybe she didn't think that I was ready to know, but what had happened, according to the Sheriff Andy, is that my father had showed up years ago with my sister, and they tried to make a life together, and he had tried to raise her with the same principles, and had tried to train her for the hunt, but she was apparently an altogether different beast. And a few months earlier, she'd decided that she had enough, and most likely she knew what was brewing, and she'd left. She had abandoned my father.
Were you upset with her?
I didn't know what I should have felt.
Did you think at all that maybe your father would still be alive if she had stayed with him?
I don't know, but I swam. I swam a long time, a week maybe, and I stumbled on a little gathering of sea that the sheriff had described, and after a little asking around, and that was a bit tough because nobody wanted to talk about my father, but eventually I did get the hint that I should go talk to a shark named Nora near the edges of the community. Now, I found Nora relaxing on a reef, and so I just started talking, at first not about anything much, but then I eventually mentioned that I just come from out east where I had news about her father, and then she stiffened up and asked me how I knew who her father was, and I told her that gossip travels fast and that I was sad to hear how he'd gone. And I asked her whether or not she missed him. And she said something that just... Well, it made me feel incredibly connected with her. She said that she missed him, but didn't have the courage to suppress that. Soon it was morning, and I had to decide what to do next. Well, I figured that I'd think it out a bit, and eventually a couple of hours of introspection turned into another day in town, and another day turned into a couple of days, and a couple of days turned into weeks. And I have yet to leave her.
Are you angry with her?
Yes, sort of. I was angry, definitely. I'm not sure if I was angry with her, per se.
What did you do? Did you channel the anger somewhere?
I'd be lying if I said it never occurred to me to eat her. But really, I'm not a monster. I mean, what is that saying? He who is happy has no story to tell?
So, you wouldn't be here if you didn't have that anger.
No, I don't think so. Oh. I think I need my anger. I think we all do. Because if there's nothing to be angry about, there's nothing to change in the world. But if we stop moving, we may as well be dead. On most days, on most days it's bad. It builds, and those are the days in which I feel like I'm at the peak of my strength, like I can shape the world with the very force of my thoughts and actions, like I have the validation of something greater. something that gives me that power. It's a barely uncontrollable urge to destroy things, to eat things up whole. But then on some days, I absorb a sense of calmness from my surroundings, and then it's not so bad.
So where are you now? How do you feel like your life so far has turned out?
Nora and I have a life. We made it happen. And I'm happy to say that in November, she'll be having beautiful twins.
This is an awkward question. But did she ever... Does she know that she's your sister?
No.
Does that bother you?
It doesn't matter. Because I don't think she cares. I certainly don't. We fell in love, and in the end, well, even if God hates a coward, I say fuck God. We couldn't find it in ourselves to deny each other.
God doesn't have to be all about denying. One of the thou shalt nots is actually thou shalt honor your mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
When you confronted your father, you said that you were going to say something before he bolted. What was that?
I was going to ask him. It didn't have to be like this.
You don't say that like a question.
I very much mean it to be a question.
What do you think he would have answered?
I don't know, but sometimes I'll put my ear to Nora's belly and hear what's brewing inside, the fighting and the death, and I'll ask them the same thing. It doesn't have to be like this. I don't think they can hear me, but but you never know.
In 2005, Neil and Nora were captured by the Australian Marine Conservatory. Scientists have carefully removed Nora's babies from her wombs and are raising them in separate environments in an effort to restore the gray nurse shark population.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Von M.
Yes, I got the blues today. Mm-hmm. I will brush it off, pretend that I'm okay. Then I'll tell a joke, a funny face to make you laugh. But then I go in the back, I smoke up, forget that. What problems? Things set aside, I will try to hide my mad emotions, yeah. I got a smile on my face, but the smile is not me. Gotta take a gas and I'm ready for freedom. Jimmy, my boss, throw him against a wall. Take all my tickets and rip them to pieces. Move to another country, change my ID, change my life. Change my occupation, brush off the old life. Brush off the complications. And I see crazy, wack, funky. I will brush it off. Yeah. I'm gonna save my blues for Christmas. I will brush it off. I will get away. Gonna save my blues for yesterday. Brush it off. Yeah. Yeah. See my blues for Christmas. I'm brushing off and get away. Gonna save my blues for yesterday. I'm an empty vessel. I'm burning castle. I'm a guitar out of tune. I'm a conga with no skin. I'm a plate that I ate yesterday. A broken elevator. Dropping from the top, I'm a happy camper. But then I'm not, no. Just brush it off. Just brush it off. Just brush it off. Yeah, I will brush it off. I'm gonna save my blues for that Christmas. I'll brush it off. Get away. Gonna save my blues for yesterday. Brush it off. Yeah, 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 yeah. Save my blues for Christmas. Brush it off. Get away. Gonna save my blues for yesterday. Brush off now, now. Brush off now, now. Brush it off now. Brush it off.
Thank you.
What we have next is what we have next are two stories about childhood. The first is a fictional piece about a point in your life when you're on the verge of understanding something about your family. The second, based off real life diaries, is about when you look back at your life and realize that you didn't. That you didn't understand anything at all, and how ridiculous it all was. And now, Eliza Bent will read her short story, Roto Park.
Thanks, Maliki. I'm Eliza Bent. I have a short story. My costume is 100 degrees. I want to go to the bathroom, but I can't till break time. Break time comes every half an hour. But the clocks with the hands confuse me. It's okay, though, because it's real crowded today, so there's lots of people to watch. Mom told me that private schools have vacation this week, and that's why I'm playing extra. I asked her why me and Wilson don't have vacation, and she said it's because we don't go to private school. I said, but we have school in our house. Isn't that private? She shook her head no, and she said, don't you be smart, young man. There's a family walking towards me. The boy holds his mom's hand, and the girl holds her dad's hand. The boy and girl are right near me, and they want to hug me, so I gotta hug them back and do the movements I'm supposed to. Wilson's better than me at the movements. Mom says it's because he's 9, a whole 3 years older than me, and has more coordination. Families always walk to him first, and when they do, he shakes his tail at me, and I do the same at him when families come to me first. So I shake my bum at him. Shake, shake, they picked me today. Shake, shake, snake, wake, Drake. I want a Drake cake. I want a Drake cake when it's break. My stomach's gurgling. The kids who hug me are eating veggie dogs that I think smell funny, so I try to hold my breath. Their mom and dad are explaining the sign that me and Wilson have to stand next to. The dad points to the sign and says, the chipmunk is part of the Scridiae family and member of the Tamias, Stasius, genus, subphylum, class Mammalia, order Rodentia. I'm not sure what all those words mean. I let go of my breath. Sometimes I want to talk to the families, but I can't, because when we had introduction, the ranger said the most important thing to do is to stay quiet and not talk when we're playing in the forest. The forest is anywhere where people can see it that we're being chipmunks. Playing has a lot of rules, like not taking off your costume, not scratching, not talking, and not leaving till break time. And you have to nod your head and pose in pictures when the families ask nicely. Also, you gotta point to the ranger station if anyone asks a question, because the rangers can talk. We can't. Playtime's fun when it's crowded like today. Me and Wilson get in trouble during uncrowded playtime, because it's boring, and that's when we try to play with the rules. Mom says it's when we break the rules, But really, we're just playing with them. When it's uncrowded, me and Wilson hold each other's hands in our paws and spin around. That's so fun, because then it gets real dizzy through the screen and the whole world bobbles up and down like a camera in a home movie. We got a home movie. It's of me and Wilson when we were little. Dad holds the camera, and me and Wilson are singing a song we learned in daycare. But Dad keeps turning around to show Mom laughing in the kitchen. That's when we lived in Hoytville. Dad still lives there now, but we don't get to see him a lot because Mom says it's too far to drive from Clay Valley. Anyhow, she doesn't really like it when me and Wilson watch that video. It's always funny when families have their cameras with them in the park. Don't they know that me and Wilson aren't their family members? Besides, we look like chipmunks anyway. Maybe other families have chipmunks in their families. I don't know. Mine doesn't. Wilson's such a show-off. He's shaking his tail at me again. Big whoop. I want to yell at him, I don't care, you've got more coordination than me. But Mom would be real mad if that happened, because then I wouldn't get to play in the park anymore. I'd probably be asked to leave, and I bet she wouldn't be so proud of me. I got to go to the bathroom still. Oh, I wish I could ask Wilson how much longer we got till break time, because he's good at reading the clocks with hands. But he's busy with that family. Now they want me in the picture, too. Wilson asked me yesterday if I smile for the pictures, and when I told him yeah, he said, "That's so dumb, Jimmy. You know we're wearing a big chipmunk head, right? They can't actually see you smile." I told him shut up, but he said, "Oh, it's called sarcastic." I hate it when he says that. I never really know what to say back. The family's leaving, and I see a man around the corner wearing dark clothes, and he's alone, which is different because usually people come in their families. He kind of looks like Dad, but I can't really tell because of my chipmunk mask. Wilson starts tapping me on the shoulder, and I see his eyes through the mask, and I think he thinks it's Dad. So we start jumping up and down and waving to Dad, even though that's not really allowed in the play rules. But it doesn't matter, because we haven't seen Dad in so long. He walks over to us and pats our heads and kneels down, and he whispers, "Is that you, boys?" And for a second, I forget that we can even speak, but then Wilson says, "Yeah, Dad, it's us." And I say, "Yeah, Dad, it is us." And he says to follow him because we're going to go on vacation. So we follow him. Nobody seems to notice, probably since it's so crowded. When we get to the bathroom, me and Wilson take off our costumes and we leave him there because Dad tells us to hurry. So we leave the bathroom and we don't have to worry too much now because we look like a normal family. I ask Dad if we can go on the rodent ridacular because I'm still hot from my costume. And the rodent ridacular is supposed to be the most fun ride because you get soaked in a tunnel and you eat cheese at the end. Anyhow, people always come to Roto Park for vacation, and can't that be ours? Mom never lets us go on the rodent ridacular because it's too expensive. But Dad says no and that we got to leave the park because he's going to take us back to Hoytville for vacation. He tells us we're going to spend some family time together and go swimming when we get there. And me and Wilson start jumping up and down and yelling, "Hoytville! Hoytville!" But he tells us to quiet down, so we do. When we get into the car, it's real hot and the leather seats are sticky. And Dad tells us he doesn't have any air conditioning. But it's fun because we ride with the windows rolled down and listen to the radio and eat McDonald's in the car for dinner. Dad's apartment is small, and he makes a bed for me and Wilson on his couch, and we build a fort and stay up till midnight. Mom makes us go to bed at 8:30 every night. I ask Wilson if Mom is going to move in with us in Dad's Hoytville apartment, and he says, "Of course not. Don't you remember we're divorced?" When we go to sleep, he steals all the blankets. I tell him, "Give them back," but he says, "Shut up, Jimmy," and snuggles tighter. The next morning, I ask Dad when we're going to go swimming, and he says today. But we don't have any bathing suits or swimmies or pails or shovels, so Dad says we'll get some at one of those stores on the way to the beach. So we get into the car again and ride fast. Wilson gets a bathing suit with dinosaurs on it, and I get one with a penguin on it. Wilson says, "Penguins are cool." I say, "Really?" And he says, "It's called sarcastic." I hate it when he says that. At the beach, we build a sandcastle, and then we bury Dad in the sand, and he laughs a lot and tells us how much he loves us boys. Then we go for a dip. Dad takes us on his shoulders and hurls us into the ocean, so we're like, he's like a human diving board, and we're the torpedoes. Mom always says, "Now, don't you boys horse around on me," but we horse with Dad. Anyway, When we get out of the ocean, my skin feels kind of stingy, and Dad says, oh, geez, I forgot you burn. He and Wilson tan, me and Mom burn. Anyhow, we're all kind of tired, so we get back in the car and listen to the radio again. Only the song is interrupted by a man talking about an Amber Alert. There's a girl next door named Amber, and Mom says she's so adorable with those blonde curls and smart as a whip, too. One day she'll be a ranger at Roto Park. I tell Dad there's a girl named Amber that lives next door, and why are they alerting her? But he doesn't pay attention because we're driving faster now. Wilson puts his hand out the window to feel the air, but Dad tells us we have to be real still because there's a car close behind us that's following us. We're in a chase! I yell, and me and Wilson start chanting, we're in a chase! We're in a chase! Wilson kicks the seat in front of him, and Dad gets angry with us. But we keep chanting and kicking, we're in a chase! We're in a chase! Then Dad yells, will you boys quiet down? In a real big voice. And Dad never really yells at us that way, only at Mom. So me and Wilson know he's being real serious. So we quiet down and whisper to each other. I ask Wilson, who do you think is chasing us? And he says, I don't know. Then Dad pulls over on the highway, and we jerk to a stop. We get out of the car, and there's policemen and cops. I wonder who the robbers are. We didn't steal anything, I say. But everyone is yelling, so I get kind of scared, because I don't really like it when people yell. So me and Wilson just stand real close to each other, and when grown-ups try to talk to us, we just stay real quiet. We don't want to get in trouble, and we don't want to get Mom or Dad in trouble. When Mom arrives, she cries and hugs us real hard and calls Dad a bastard. Dad gets into a police car, and it looks like he's crying a little. He calls out, I love you, boys, but the police car drives away before I can say, I love you too, Dad. So I start to run and yell, I love you too, Daddy! But a policeman picks me up and takes me back to Mom and Wilson. So then I start to cry a little, and then Wilson cries a little, and Mom cries a whole lot. And on the way home, she tells us how much she loves us boys, and she's sorry about all that's happened. She says we'll go to public school from now on. No more Roto Park for us, not even on the weekend, because the lawyers are going to make Dad pay for child support. I want to ask, what's child support, and why do we have to stop playing at Roto Park? But Wilson just glares at me, so I glare back at him. He pinches my arm and tells me I look like a red pig. So I try to kick him, but I can't reach. My arm hurts, and the air conditioning in Mom's car makes my skin sting more. When we get home, Mom rubs aloe vera all over my legs and belly and arms, and the green goo feels so cold on my skin. She tells me to remember today, because it's probably the last time I'm going to see Dad for a while. I say, what about our home movie? Can't we watch that? Mom doesn't say anything. She seems real sad, so I don't ask any more questions. When Mom tucks us in, she says, sweet dreams, and I call out, sweet dreams, Mom, as she closes the door. I can't go to sleep, so I wait for a while, and then I tiptoe out of my bedroom. Wilson's snoring, so I try to step on the floor when he snores, but sometimes I'm off and the floor squeaks. It's because I'm not so coordinated. I put our home movie into the VCR, but I'm not sure which buttons to push. So instead of watching, I just hum the song that me and Wilson sing in the video, and I try to imagine Mom and Dad laughing instead of crying like they did today.
As an adult, David Nadelberg discovered an unsent love letter he wrote to a girl he stalked in 10th grade. We've all had those moments when old memories make surprise reappearances and we think, did I really do that? Well, David decided to bring these real-life embarrassing moments into a stage show called Mortified, ripped from the pages of real life, as they like to describe it. They have a monthly show in New York, L.A., Boston, San Francisco, and Chicago, and a book available for purchase. Please welcome our guest Mortified speaker tonight, Julia Rossi.
I think I have bronchitis, so sorry. So when I was 12, I had a very romantic love affair with a boy named Jimmy, but he didn't know about it. So what I'm going to read to you is 5 months of my 3-year obsession with Jimmy Petrulis. Sorry. May 29th, 1991. I love Jimmy Petrulis. He is so cute and funny. Everyone asked him if he would ever go out with me, and at first he said maybe, and then he said no, and then he said, I don't know. Today he called me a hairy bitch, but then said only joking. I know he's joking. I wish at the carnival he'd see me and buy me a cotton candy and win me a big stuffed animal. We go on the Ferris wheel just as More Than Words played softly in the background. Oh, God, I love him so much. I know you can't force a person to like you, but I think I'm nice, pretty, and funny. Everyone says he acts like he likes me, but what's keeping us apart? That Greek god, I'd call him, but his phone number is unlisted. June 24th, 1991. On Wednesday, June 19th, I find out that Jimmy likes me. He asked me out on a date for Saturday, June 22nd at John G's house. I said yes, of course. Seemed kind of funny that one day we're friends and the next day he likes me. We all went into the living room and sat on the couch, and I sat with Jimmy's arm around me. He tried to French me, and I laughed and bit his lip. Then Lori and John kissed, so we did, and it was gross and weird. His breath smelled like chicken and cheese. I was scared thinking I would screw up, but if you kiss a boy, don't you feel like a magic? I didn't. Then I asked for his phone number, and he said, it's private, I'll call you. I cried that night because I knew something was wrong, but I can't dump him. What if he really does like me? I cried because I was so confused. I should have been happy, but I wasn't. And the next day, I got dumped, that SOV. God, okay. July 19th, 1991. Let's see, how can I say this without putting a downpour on everyone else's life? But life bites the big shit. Sure, I can be grateful, but I want it all. What about the hungry, the disabled, the prisoners of badness? I don't know what that means. Wait, I'm lucky, but what do I want from this thing we call life? Jimmy. What am I, stupid? He used me, not like I didn't want to kiss him. I wish he would come to my door with roses and take me for a long walk around the pond by the water and then embrace in a long, loving kiss. But it will never happen. Now, just because I say I want to kiss him does not mean I'm a horny, perverted slut. Just because I wear eyeliner and makeup and my bangs up does not make me a slut. That's another thing. Why is this world so focused on sex? I mean, not to sound gross, but sure, sometimes I might want to see dirty movies. And I might want to experience it when I'm older and ready. But boys are always like, quote, yeah, I got some tit off that chick. Or quote, ooh, look at that girl. Guys can be so insensitive. Why can't a guy be bold enough to cry? And another thing I hate hatred and prejudice. I also hate it when people lie to me. One of my friends claimed she was raped. Well, it's probably true, but you can't be sure. I know I'm no honest Abe, and I feel bad for having lied to people in my life, but when I die, I want to go to heaven, so I hope God forgives and forgets, because you're never alone, because there's always someone watching. September 7th, 1991. Wicked sorry I haven't written in so long. I'm from Boston. Right now, I'm listening to Stairway to Heaven. It reminds me of dances when I danced with Mike D, but never with Jimmy. So I'm like, okay, Julia, let's like someone else. But today, I looked into Jimmy's eyes, and this is corny, but I just can't like someone else when I really love Jimmy. I really want everyone, including Jimmy, to understand that I am crazy for him. He is my first capital letters true love. Today, he looked so sweet in his Chicago Bulls shorts, UCLA t-shirt, and new cap. I have every rose has its thorn on now. Why am I listening to such depressing slow songs? The reason is, dot, dot, dot. I know this is going to sound weird, but I'm trying to cry. Why, you say? Well, for some strange reason, I feel like it. And I heard crying is healthy. I'm also pissed at school. I mean, I'm not a geek. I'm in the middle. But the kids at CMS are so snobby. I mean, they're nice to me and all, but it's like you have to worry about clothes and looks, capital letters, too stressful. Then we work. Then, this is sick, but I'm going to get my parentheses dot parentheses soon. What if I'm in school or talking to Jimmy? Can we have an alarm or something? I hate being 12. I know my B-day is in a month, but still. Today, Jimmy asked me to hold his drink for him. Does he like me? This is totally a time for Dr. Ruth. I'm 12. It's almost 1 a.m., and I just listened to Heaven, and now I'm listening to More Than Words. This ought to be a tearjerker. Maybe I love him because he's the first guy I kissed. No, that's not it. He's cute and funny, but there is something more. I feel like I know him too well, like we're talking to each other through our eyes. You know? I wonder if you're thinking of me, Jimmy. Jimmy, I hope you love me too. G Knight, I love Jimmy. TL forever. October 26, 1991. Yesterday was my birthday, and what a birthday it was. I cried for a half hour straight because of Jimmy. I saw House Party 2 with Lori. It was cool. Then I called Jimmy and I said, I really, really like you. And he said, okay, bye. Right now, OPP is on the radio. This is one of those songs I love and it would make me happy, but I am too upset to be happy. I would be crying right now, but I have been crying too much today and yesterday, so I guess I'm out of tears. I have never been so in love with a boy, and also so hurt by a boy. He always acted like he liked me, asked for my number, stared at me. It was so fucking obvious that he liked me. Well, I thought he did, and so did my friends. And then yesterday, keep in mind it was my B-day, I find out that he likes Shannon. Today he was ignoring me and gave Shannon the cap from his gut Gatorade bottle and licked it. I can't believe that. And she had the nerve to ask me if I hate her. Well, she said she might go out with him and that she does like him a little bit. She is such an ugly bitch. She can be nice, but I am way prettier. Well, gotta go. By the way, when I blew up my B-day candles, my wish did not come true. Right, Jimmy? Thanks.
Four letters.
strangers I have made myself at home while in the arms of my true lover. I never felt so all alone. These days crash down, they're a tempest. We take them one by one. Oh, love is such a small way. It's just four letters. Find me on MySpace, and you can find Ollie at ollierockberger.com. Thank you so much.
A cool night in the high desert wraps around the shoulders of Cowgirl Jane and Tom the Boulder Johnson, two wandering souls in the vast American landscape. The campfire crackles gently as they contemplate the manifest wonders of the West.
Sure is chilly tonight.
Mm-hmm.
More so than last night, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder if that means anything, if it's a premonition. Mm. If there's a bit more wood, maybe we could put some on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't talk much, do you?
Words. Words are for people who have something to say.
So that means you got nothing to say?
Nope.
Nope?
Nope.
Nothing at all?
Nope.
Nothing that big noggin of yours?
Nope.
Huh.
My strength is in my silent resolve.
I see. Tom! What was that?
Hear what?
That!
That eerie and mysterious rustling?
Yeah, that!
Well, I bet that's just a jackrabbit.
What if it ain't?
What else would it be?
Maybe it's a bear, or a tiger, or an alien.
All right, a bear's too big to hide in there. There ain't no tigers around these parts, and you know our government's policy on Mexicans crossing the border.
Well, I'm just saying, sometimes you need something to happen so you got something to talk about.
All right, I'll take a gander.
Okay. Wait, wait!
What?
Take this.
A shoe?
If it's dangerous, you can throw it at him.
I ain't gonna throw no shoe.
Take this then.
A jar of marmalade?
Higher density, better aerodynamic properties. Wait, take this.
A vintage 1984 recording of Wham's hit single, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go? Janie, you know I'm Buddhist.
Okay, okay. Take this.
A big stick. Now you're talking.
Ah!
Ah!
Ah! Ah!
Ah! Whoa, whoa, whoa. Put the stick down.
Who would Mary Sue's cattle prod Witzer you?
I'm the postman.
The postman?
Yeah, that's right. The postman.
Well, we ain't got no mailbox around here.
I see that, but nonetheless, I've got a delivery to make. And through rain and sleet and snow, I will persevere.
Yeah, we ain't got much of rain, sleet, or snow either.
Say, it's just you two all the way out here?
You see anybody else?
What is it that you two do out here anyway?
We're doing what we were doing yesterday. Whatever it was we were doing yesterday, well, I figure we may as well keep doing it today. Except we were doing it about 10 miles yonder.
I am leading a life free of desires.
That too.
How long you guys been out here?
What's it to you? Who'd be sending us mail out here anyway?
Why don't you take a look?
Let's see here. Current resident, 1 Dusty Plains, Wyoming, 82309-1613.
Nobody here named current resident.
That's probably junk mail.
If it's junk, why'd you bring it?
It's my job.
Maybe you could be a garbage man, too. Then you could just take it right back.
Well, you can write and ask them not to send you mail anymore.
Do we look like the writing types?
Anyway, here's the next one. This one's addressed to me, and it says it's urgent. Congratulations! You've been selected a winner, son of a gun!
That's probably junk, too.
Now, what is it with you and junk?
Hey, don't shoot the messenger. I don't write the stuff.
The next one's addressed to you, Tom.
Whoop! Well, I'll be damned. Dear Tom, it has been a long time.
Oh, give me that. Dear Tom, it has been a long time since we last saw each other on that train platform that rainy day in Paris. I'm writing to you to let you know that I am well and awaiting your return. Also awaiting your return is Tomas, your son. We hope that you have found yourself on your spirit journey through the Wyoming desert. But Tomas is in dire need of a fatherly influence. P.S. Don't forget to stop by the store and pick up a can of fava beans on your way home. Tom, what is this?
Fava beans are for pansies.
Is this true? You got a kid and a woman waiting for you in Paris?
I reckon I did a lot of things in life. Siren a child in Paris ain't the craziest of them.
Well, what you gonna do? You gonna go back?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
You just gonna sit here?
Yep.
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 What about Tomas?
What about him?
What's he gonna do being fatherless and all?
Well, I didn't have no father, and I turned out just fine. Now, it takes one to know one. That is the greatest lesson in life that I'm gonna teach him.
Ain't that generous of you?
What do you want me to do?
Well, you gotta do something. He's your kid, Tom. Ain't nothing gonna change that.
Ain't nothing gonna change the fact that I'm broke and I ain't got no way to travel that kind of distance. I'm a wandering cowboy. I wander, and I'm a cowboy. And between the two of those things, there ain't no space for a kid.
Why, I oughta.
Ow! You punched me in the nose, Janie. You didn't just oughta, you did, you bitch.
Well, look, at least do something.
Buddhism teaches me to eliminate desires.
Does it teach you to sit on your ass?
It teaches that all life is suffering.
Oh, get over it. At least do this. At least write the boy something. Hey, postman, Tom's gonna write a letter.
Like a bull wiping his ass after a crap I ain't.
Come on, it'll be painless. Right?
Yeah. Do you have any paper?
We'll use this here.
The cover of a vintage 1984 LP for the hit single Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
It's all we got.
Okay, then. You got a pen?
Why would we have a pen if we ain't got no paper?
Gotcha.
Here's one.
Where'd you get that?
Remember that tax collector that came around these parts a couple months back?
The one we shot?
Yeah, he had a pen on him. Now, you talk outright.
To whom it may concern.
Dear Tomas.
Your mother is a witching woman who got the better of me one night.
Your mother is a very beautiful woman.
I remember the day I rolled into town.
I remember the day I rolled into town.
Paris was famous for its whorehouses in that day.
I had heard of Paris's famous croissants.
But none of them wanted anything to do with a rough and tough redneck American like me.
But they ran out that day.
But then, spilling out onto the street, I heard something. A guitar and a voice. A voice so angelic and so clear and so calm. It came from a little cafe and I went in. I sat down at a table and she didn't shoo me away. I listened and when she finished her song, she said, "Hello, cowboy. Sit for a bit. Take off your hat." And I said, "I'll never take off my hat. If I take off my hat, that means I've stopped moving. And if I've stopped moving, then that means I ain't no cowboy. And if I ain't no cowboy, I'll die." She nodded, and I knew that she understood. And she came and she sat down with me, and we sat for the whole afternoon. And then when the sun had set, everywhere in the world, the sun sets the same. When the sun had set, she reached out and took hold of my hat and put it down on the table between us. And that, Tomas, is how you came to be.
I lost you. Take off your hat.
Oh, hell, Janie, I don't even have a stamp.
How much is postage to Paris, Mr. Postman?
It doesn't matter. I can take care of it.
It's all right, Tom.
No. If there's one thing I'll never do in my life, it's take a favor from another man. Come on, Janie, let's mount up.
Where are we going, Tom?
You need a ride into town, Mr. Postman?
You know, I could get used to this solitary life of constant reflective musings in the vast American landscape. This down-home and rustic variant on Godot. This most pastoral inflection on Thoreau's ideas. Do coyotes eat people?
Not if you eat them first.
We get to town and then what, Tom?
You don't suppose Doc Store will have fava beans?
The end of a cool night in the high desert. Cowgirl Jane and Tom the Boulder Johnson ride. The waking sun embracing their journey into the unknown.
I was driving down here on the West Side Highway and saw a car burning. And I just realized for some reason, every time I see a burning car, it's always in the rain or the snow or something. It's bizarre. It's never dry. So I was up in Potsdam. One time, I like to call it Potsdam, and it's right next to the Canadian border, and I was doing a gig with my band, and it was about 10 below, and we were hanging out in this bar, waiting to go to the bar next door to play our gig, and it was snowing, and there was loads of snow built up. I mean, these guys, when they clear the snow, it just never melts, you know? So there's walls of, like, 20 feet of snow. And there was a car burning in the parking lot, 10 below. And so it reminded me of this, like, just trailer park type of situation, which reminds me of Cops, which is a show. And which reminds me that Wes, who brought me here, really loves this song. So, and it has been inspired by the show Cops. In fact, it's been inspired by Valentine's Day edition of Cops. And on that episode, there seemed to be a lot of things breaking and people slamming doors and windows and glass and all kinds of things, making all kinds of great noise, percussive noises that I thought, maybe I can put that in a song. Travel with the suitcase, travel with the suitcase. Travel with the suitcase, travel with the suitcase. Uh-oh, the money's gone, uh-oh, the money's gone. Uh-oh, the money's gone, uh-oh, the money's gone. Dishes in the air, glasses and silverware. You can hear the noise, five doors down. It goes crash, boom, pow. They keep breaking up. Crash, boom, pow. They keep breaking up. Travel to a new place. Travel with the suitcase. Travel to a new place. Uh-oh, the money's gone. Uh-oh, the money's gone. Uh-oh, the money's gone. No time for redemption. Dishes in the air, glasses and silverware. You kick a door down, it makes a big sound. It goes crash, boom, pow. They keep breaking up. Crash, boom, pow. They keep breaking up.
Starbucks, can I take your order?
Yes, I'd like a tea, a coffee, and a decaf grande, no-fat, organic, cinnamon dolce latte, extra hot, no foam macchiato with just a hint of tarragon.
For here to go.
For here.
Can I get your name?
What for?
To write on the cup. We call out the names when we're done making the drinks.
Ah.
So you know when to get yours.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Who's on the first, what's on the second, and I don't know who's on the third?
That's what I need to know.
I'm telling you. Who's on the first, what's on the second, and I don't know who's on the third?
That's what I need to know.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Let's start with the first drink. Your name.
Who?
Your name.
Who?
Yours.
My what?
Your name.
Who?
The name that goes on the first cup.
Who goes on the first cup?
You tell me.
That's what I'm saying. Who? The first cup belongs to who?
You?
Exactly.
When I'm done making this drink, I should hand the cup to who?
Right.
Who needs it?
I do.
You do.
Right. Do I ever?
So what do I write on the cup?
That's not proper grammar.
What's not proper grammar?
No. What goes on the second cup?
I don't know.
Wrong. What goes on the second cup? The third cup is for I don't know.
You don't know what?
No, I don't know. What goes on the second cup?
You don't know what goes on the second cup?
What?
Aren't you ashamed of not knowing your friend's name?
I do know his name.
Well, what is it?
Exactly.
His name is Exactly.
What?
His name is Exactly.
What?
Are you hard of hearing? His name is Exactly.
I don't even know what that means.
Should I write Exactly on this cup?
No, of course not.
Well, then I should write what?
Now you've got it.
Forget it. Let's go on to the third cup.
We did that one already. Don't you remember?
I don't know.
That a girl.
I should write what?
No, what goes on the second cup?
I'm not asking what goes on the second cup.
So you're finally listening, huh?
Will you please stick to the third cup?
Okay.
What is on the third cup?
For Christ's sake, you just asked me to stick to the third cup.
What goes on the third cup?
No.
I don't know.
Yes.
Who gets the third cup?
Who gets the first cup?
Who's being difficult now?
I'm not being difficult. You're the one talking about me in the third person.
Who?
I'm who.
How should I know?
I'm telling you.
What?
He's over there.
Where?
There, with a baseball cap on.
So what's his name?
Exactly.
But you just told me not to write Exactly on this cup.
Okay. Okay, maybe I'll just call them over and we can sort this out, except I don't know, we're still trying to find this cafe. Which street is it on?
Right.
Right street?
No.
Which street?
Yes.
Which street would that be on?
Which street?
This one.
No, this is a block west of here.
How can a place be a block west of itself?
It can't.
But you just said that this is a block west of here.
It is. I don't understand what you're asking.
This cafe is on which street?
Right.
But you just said it wasn't on right street. Which street is it on?
Which street?
This street.
This street is over there.
No, I'm talking about this street, the one that the cafe is on.
Which street is the street that this cafe is on?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, you don't need to get all flustered. Look on a map.
At least tell me what the cross street is.
Where?
Here.
No, where?
No, where? What? We gotta be somewhere.
Now you're just being silly.
We are where?
Where and which?
And when and why? None of this makes any sense to me.
Maybe a cup of coffee will help you focus. If you could just tell me the names to put on the cups, then I could make the coffee.
How can I trust you to get the names right when you can't even tell me what the address is?
I did.
Which is?
Yes.
Are you fucking with me?
Who?
I thought so. Good luck trying to pry a tip out of my angry clenched fist.
Oh, screw you, buddy.
Oh, that's it. I demand to see your manager.
My manager?
Yeah, your manager.
That's fucking ridiculous.
Well, it's my right.
That's right.
So what's his name?
Fucking ridiculous.
Well, it may be fucking ridiculous, but you still ought to tell me what his name is.
No, his name is fucking ridiculous.
It's not his fault. His mama gave him a ridiculous name.
Naturally. Their last name is ridiculous.
Is it so ridiculous that you can't tell me what it is?
The man is fucking ridiculous. You're not understanding me. When my manager was brought into this world as a wee baby, the piece of paper that the doctor stamped his foot on and labeled with the time of birth has fucking ridiculous written all over it.
And I suppose I have imbecile written all over my face. You are unbelievable.
Who?
Not me, you.
At least I'm not fucking ridiculous.
I beg to differ. What's fucking ridiculous is that you won't name your manager.
It is fucking ridiculous.
I'm glad we agree on something. Do you call your manager fucking ridiculous in front of his face?
I do.
What nerve!
I call him fucking ridiculous because his name is fucking ridiculous.
No, you see, calling him an insult isn't the same as calling him by his name.
I'm not insulting him!
Then what are you doing?
I'm trying to do my job, and all you're doing is confusing me with who's on the first cup, what goes on the second cup, and I don't know what the fuck is supposed to be on the third cup!
That's the closest you've been all day!
And I'm trying to do my best to tell you that the cafe is at which street and where, but you keep yelling at me and accusing me of insulting my boss. I don't get paid enough for this abuse, and that is fucking ridiculous, so go talk to him about it and just leave me the fuck alone!
You're fucking ridiculous!
Leave my love life out of it! In 1950, Billy Wilder skewered Hollywood with his ode to getting dumped, personally and professionally, in Sunset Boulevard. The film deals with the eccentricities of Norma Desmond, a silent film star who finds herself lost and forgotten in the era of talking films. Desmond, played by real-life silent star Gloria Swanson, cuts at the inadequacies of film actresses who require the help of an audio element to convey ideas. "We didn't need dialogue," she says. "We had faces." Your opinion is noted, Miss Desmond, but you have it wrong. In an era of dazzling visual effects, computer graphics, pyrotechnic rock concerts, quick cutting, slick advertisements, and plastic surgery, it's easy to forget that storytelling doesn't require the eyes. In its most basic form,
Storytelling is simply speaking. It is not a dying tradition. Eavesdrop in a bar, you'll hear traces of the art. It has merely been knocked off its throne. And so we leave you to go on your merry way tonight with simply a reminder. Speak up. Speak clearly. But above all, speak. This is We Had Voices speaking from the tank, New York City. Good night.
In the evening.
That was We Had Voices, Session 1. It was recorded over two nights at the Tank, March 22nd and March 23rd, 2007. The players for the night, Matt Biagini, Kelly Hayes, and Maliki Orozco. Our soundstress and stage manager was Allison Gao. Eliza Bent read her short story, Roto Park. You heard Julia Razzi from The Mortified Show. Randy Barber also performed. www.getmortified.com. They have a book available for purchase. Our talented musical guests were Mark Von M and Carriott Harmon with Ollie Rockberger. You can find them all on MySpace. Special thanks to Zoe Moore and The Tank for hosting us. The Tank is a wonderful nonprofit that provides space for emerging artists to do their things. You should be sure to check them out. www.thetanknyc.org. Our program was designed by the wonderful Leo Ho, and the show was produced and directed by myself, Wes Chow. If you're interested in hearing more about us or participating, helping out, contributing content, or if you're just a cool cat, check out our website, www.wehadvoices.com. Sign up for the mailing list. We promise we won't spam you. And remember, gentle listener, without you, we'd all just be mumbling to ourselves. Take care, everyone, and thanks for listening. Telling me that many people lost.